This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, everyone. This is Sue Marks, reading today from the Catholic Telegraph, March 2024. From Katie Skiba, Catholic at Home, The Particularity of Holy Simplicity. For years, I've moonlighted as a minimalist consultant, guiding clients as they simplify their possessions and demands on their time. Talking about simplicity makes me bubble over with enthusiasm, as when you share a life-changing book or a crowd-pleasing recipe. You found something so good that it's hard not to talk about it. Drawn to minimalism and simplicity for decades, after I digested a handful of books, blogs, and podcasts on the subject, I relentlessly pursued a smaller life more manageable for my family. What began as whittling away at excess possessions and clearing our space of visual noise morphed into deeply considering what God was asking of me. Already a wife and mother, I had a clear understanding that loving my husband and children needed to be at the top of my list. However, in addition to a vocation, the Lord blesses us with gifts and charisms, the things that make us feel more alive, the way people encounter Jesus through us. I realized that how I pursue holy simplicity was to keep my vocation, gifts, and charisms as reference points, then trim the fat. Whatever distracts from these reference points gets the boot, and the possessions and time commitments that contribute get to stay. While there is no shortage of literature or YouTube channels specifying how to simplify your life, none have as their foundation God's particular design and call for your particular soul. There is no one-size-fits-all or even fits-most approach, because quite truly, holy simplicity is as unique as our own souls. Think of our brothers and sisters in heaven, gloriously donning an imperishable crown because they focused on whatever the Lord asked of them. St. Francis and St. Clair both forsook wealth and societal convention to radically rely on providence. St. Benedict emphasized a life balanced with ora et labora, prayer and work. St. Elizabeth of Hungary was a wealthy queen who eagerly shared her majesty's resources with her kingdom's residents to the criticism of courtiers and palace staff. St. Monica's determination to faithfully serve her unfaithful husband and simultaneously supplicate Christ for her wayward son's conversion made her a true conduit of God's love and mercy to the two important men in her life. These saints were made saints by accepting and obeying God's will for their lives, trusting that only good would come from the one who is love and mercy itself. Though we know countless sins exhibited the same intent, gaze on heaven, not one single one of them did it perfectly. They sinned, repented, and sinned again until their days ran out. But that's people. We know from every story of humanity, from creation to present day, that the pursuit of things and a life outside of the Lord's will for us consistently yields frustration, misery, and sorrow. Remember Adam and Eve partaking of fruit clearly designated as off-limits. Think of Jonah, who tried to outrun God's request to help the Ninevites convert from their wickedness. Judas Iscariot traveled and worked with Jesus himself, yet still vulnerable to even grave sin, committed the worst of betrayals in human history. Simply put, in drawing close to Him in whose image and likeness we are made, we become more like Him and more authentically ourselves. Life is more joyful despite its suffering. Conversely, going our own way and choosing our wants over God's will affects interior chaos as well as a propensity to brood over whatever we're chasing. And once we get our hands on it, it won't be enough. I humbly submit this as an invitation. Who is it that your Creator made you to be? What sets your soul on fire? What do you need in your life to move forward with grace and become an increasingly better conduit of God to your nearest and dearest? Begin there. The result of cutting loose that which fails to contribute to God's loving will for our lives is clarity, that I can finally breathe feeling. Living with less yields so much more than you could ever expect. And returning to the subject of Catholic spirituality, Franciscan Spirituality by Brother Mark Soner, OFM. Brother Mark Soner professed temporary vows with the Franciscan friars in 1981, solemn vows in 1985, and was ordained to the priesthood on June 13th, 1987 at St. Francis Sarah Parish in Cincinnati. He is the current provincial vicar for the recently unified coast-to-coast province of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Franciscan spirituality flows from the experience of a single man, St. Francis of Assisi, 1181 through 1226. Son of cloth merchant Pietro Bernardone, St. Francis went from fighting for the values of wealth and fame to feeling contempt for those same values. After suffering for a year in an open pit prison from fear, cold, hunger, and battle trauma, he emerged a changed man. Numerous transformational experiences over the next years molded him into the saint he is, and key themes arose from his life experiences that influence Franciscans to this very day. First, a primacy for prayer. St. Francis heard Jesus' voice from the San Damiano crucifix say, "Go repair my church," which, as you can see, is in ruins. He experienced Christ fully in the Catholic Church, even though he recognized how bruised and broken the church was. He and his brothers, in Latin, friars, regularly prayed the office together and participated in Mass at various churches in the fields where they worked as day laborers. Here, Jesus continued to come down upon the altar. Here, Jesus puts himself into the priest's hands, and we touch him daily with our mouth. St. Francis reminded the friars, "Look, brothers, at the humility of God and pour out your hearts before him. Hold back nothing of yourselves for yourselves, so that he who gives himself totally to you may receive you totally." These words demonstrate St. Francis's passion for the Eucharist, the Church, and that central relationship with Jesus Christ. Second, an astonishment for God's love. St. Francis sought solitary places to spend long hours in prayer, where he met the humble Christ. Jesus' incarnation as a Bethlehem babe held a prominent place. That God desired to love us so much to become one of us in our human flesh always astounded St. Francis. He wanted to demonstrate this great love. In 1223, in Greccio, where the people's hearts had grown cold, he reconstructed the manger scene in a cave with barn animals. In this spot, during the Christmas Mass, people saw in St. Francis's arms what seemed like a lifeless baby awakened from a deep sleep. The whole village went home singing. Third, an appreciation for creation. Franciscans see that as God became flesh for us in Jesus, all of God's creation reflects the magnificence of God. In his Canticle of the Creatures, St. Francis praises God through the creatures, understanding them as brother or sister. His love for nature was expressed with deep familial connection. Fourth, a recognition of Jesus' humility. In the Eucharist, the Christmas crib, and all of creation, St. Francis noticed the humility of God in Jesus. The hands that once held moon and stars grasped Mary's little finger and would stoop to wash our feet. As Franciscans, we fall in love with this humble God and stop our ambition to be among the clever. Fifth, Jesus in the suffering. St. Francis encountered this Jesus in a poor beggar in Rome, with whom he exchanged his clothes, and in the leper he embraced. Sometimes we try to find God in an antiseptic church, and we trip over God lying on the church steps or in the pain in our lives. St. Francis discovered God in his own poverty, his woundedness, and he taught us what to do with our pain. Rather than passing it along, the worst pain can become a sacred wound, a gate of heaven, when we learn to embrace it with Christ, touch it to his wounds. The Franciscan friars, sisters, and seculars continue looking to the needs of those on society's periphery. Historically, we have cared for people whom the world despises, families living below the poverty line, the homeless, the mentally ill. We are psychologists, scholars, lawyers, teachers, and any profession, even priests. While some have spent time in hermitages for deeper prayer, we live in fraternities where we daily pray and cook together and invite others to join with us as a family would. We are bound together by vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. We listen for the Spirit, especially with a view toward those who struggle on the edge of our world. Ignatian Spirituality by Father Jacob Boddicker, S.J. Father Boddicker is a Jesuit priest serving at St. Xavier Church in downtown Cincinnati. Originally from Tipton, Iowa, he entered the Society of Jesus in 2006 and was ordained in 2017. Prior to his current assignment, he served as a pastor on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota as part of the St. Francis Mission. On May 20, 1521, a fiery young man named Inyo Lopez de Onoz Loyola, better known to us as St. Ignatius of Loyola, was injured in a battle at Pamplona in Spain. In the long months of bed rest and boredom during his convalescence, Ignatius either daydreamed about great romances and adventures or read and reflected upon two books given to him, On the Life of Christ and the Lives of the Saints. Noticing the romantic fantasies ultimately felt hollow and boring, while reflecting on Christ and the saints kept him energized and satisfied even after he completed them. He paid careful attention to his interior movements. By the time he was back on his feet, enduring a permanent limp from his injuries, he forsook his nobility and wealth and made his way as a poor pilgrim and beggar. For a year he lived in nearby Manresa, spending several months praying and fasting in a nearby cave, sometimes praying up to 7 hours a day. During this time, he developed what would become his famous spiritual exercises. Because the importance of his own personal experience came to form the DNA of Ignatius's spirituality, personal experience is the very matter of such Ignatian practices as the daily examen, the spiritual exercises, and even Ignatian contemplation. He came to understand that God is not only constantly laboring on our behalf, but also desires that we labor with him. Ignatian spirituality seeks to discern and notice God present and laboring in our everyday lives, such that in becoming more attentive to his Spirit's movements in our hearts and souls, we come to know how he desires us to serve alongside him. By this, we come to know Jesus on a deeply personal level, in a relationship such as the apostles themselves enjoyed, that not only may we come to know and love him, but we might likewise go into the world and make him known to others, speaking not only from our knowledge of the faith, but our lived experience of him. How does one practice Ignatian spirituality? There are many online resources, but the fundamental practice, so important that St. Ignatius exhorts a Jesuit never to miss practicing it, no matter how busy he may be, is that of the daily examen. Find a place that is quiet and conducive to prayer and set aside 5, 10, 15 minutes, or whatever brief time you have. Then, Number one, place yourself in God's presence and thank Him for everything He has done for you. Number two, ask Him to enlighten your mind, heart, and soul to better notice and understand how He has been at work in your life. Number three, review your day or since the last time you prayed the Examen until the present moment. Recall specific moments and what you experienced in them. Number four, reflect on some of those specific experiences. Where did you experience God's presence and love? How did you respond? Where did you experience His absence, distance? Where did you move away from Him? Ask His forgiveness for any moments of sin. Number five, look ahead to tomorrow. What are you anxious about or looking forward to? What do you want His help with or want to talk to Him about? Make a resolution about how you plan to confront one future thing with His help. And finally, number six, conclude by praying the Our Father. Tri-County Catholics, Bringing Parishes Together Through the Eucharist by Lisa Fletcher. What better way to bring a family of parishes together than through the Eucharist, the source and summit of Catholic life? That was the thought of Father Ed Burns and his staff at Tri-County Catholics Family of Parishes, which includes St. Gabriel and St. Michael Churches in Cincinnati and St. John in Westchester. When Beacons of Light prompted staffing changes in July of 2022, Tri-County Catholics tried something new and bold. They unified the three parishes in one RCIA program and held one combined Easter vigil in 2023 at the largest of the churches, St. John, which also houses a large baptismal font for adult baptisms. On this holiest night of the year, we felt it was best for our parishes to come together as one, Father Burns said. Becky Albrink, Director of Evangelization for Tri-County Catholics, agreed. This was the first ministry we did as a family, she said. RCIA candidates and catechumens will often experience their own community as they learn and grow together, and we wanted them to enter the church together as well. As they hoped, the group of RCIA candidates wasn't the only community built. This was a chance for us to combine resources for the vigil, Albrink said. Ministers were selected from all three churches, and the most exciting part was having choir members present from the entire family. A large choir with multiple instrumentalists led our people together in song and worship, she continued. The success of that first combined Easter vigil in 2023, attended by more than 400 parishioners, means Tri-County Catholics is again preparing to bring their churches together for a very special evening. It wasn't easy in the beginning to convince all parishioners that this was a good idea. It is hard, and in fact heartbreaking, when parishioners have attended the vigil for years at their own churches and then must go to another church, Albrink admitted. The change was difficult. However, initial hesitations and worries eventually transformed into acceptance and appreciation. The looks on their faces when they saw a greeter, choir members, music directors, Eucharistic ministers, and more representing their smaller communities was just amazing, she said. It was the highlight of our first year together. Father Burns agreed that he couldn't have asked for a better vigil experience. We didn't want parishioners to feel like they were just visiting St. John's Parish, he said. It was wonderful to have many parishioners from our three churches join in various ways. And with the lights down and everyone's baptismal candle lit for the singing of the Exultant, it was just beautiful. Tri-County Catholics has tried to keep the Eucharist as their family of parishes' central focus. According to Father Burns, first and foremost, we make sure the weekly celebration of the Mass is done well. In addition, Tri-County Catholics added Eucharistic exposition at more parishes, offered a Bible study focused on the Eucharist in Scripture, and is preparing for a parish retreat this March centered on the Eucharist. and more events are planned to bring this family of parishes members together in community, including a family outdoor mass and picnic in October, combined events with youth, and a combined choir at the Thanksgiving Day Mass. It cannot be just one and done, Albrink said. This has worked because it has been a continual effort on the part of the staff, parish councils, worship commissions, musicians, and many more to assist all of us in understanding that we have a large extended family beyond the walls of our individual churches. Spiritual Direction, Walking Your Faith Journey with Accompaniment by Eileen Connolly, OSU. Do you desire to deepen your relationship with God and be more attentive to His presence, activity, and invitation in your life? Do you feel you could benefit from walking the spiritual journey, admittedly a lonely path at times, and with someone who could affirm, clarify, and even challenge you along the way? Then Spiritual Direction could be of assistance to you on your faith journey. It is important to note that Spiritual Direction is not pastoral or psychological counseling or confession. Rather, it focuses on a person's relationship with God, including his or her prayer life and life experiences, said Sister Donna Stephan, SC, a longtime spiritual director and retreat leader. The term itself is almost a misnomer because one is not actually telling another person what to do, but listening to God's action in the moment as we are meeting. The person brings what is going on with them, what they feel is significant. The belief is that God is alive in this person, and the director's role is to assist them in finding that inner place where God is leading them and paying attention to that. It is a learning process, a journey, as people tap into their deepest life with God. It is life-giving, she added. For a person who wants to grow in their relationship with God, this can be quite helpful. Spiritual directors are men and women, single, married, priests, or members of religious communities who underwent specific training to engage in this ministry. Many local spiritual directors receive formal training at the Jesuit Spiritual Center in Milford, including Sister Stephan. She noted that when seeking a director, it is essential to ask candidates about their training, whether they did a practicum, where they received feedback, and whether they had individual supervision. This ministry is rooted in her own very deep experiences of God that changed my life. I feel that God invited me into this journey, she said. It is so life-giving for me to hear about people's experiences with God, to encourage them, to support them. It feels like a gift and a blessing from God that I did not create, but that God gave. Liz Tassone also refers to spiritual direction as a calling and gift from God, admitting she had no concept of what it was until introduced to it by a client at the radio station where she worked. Walking with someone on their journey appealed to me, Tassone said. I wanted to experience that. She attended training through the Sycamore Spiritual Center in Louisville and has seen clients since 2010. She recalls her son's statement when she completed the program. Now you get to tell people what to do. That has stayed with me because that's not at all what spiritual direction is about, Tassone said. It is about deep listening and letting that person speak from their life experience. I am just asking questions to help them go deeper and for them to know God's presence. It is non-fixing listening. I do not think you get that at many places other than with a spiritual director. Sessions with a spiritual director create a space where everything belongs, Tassone said. There is not a part of your life that does not belong. That space is held by the director in God's love. I hope that is how I am holding the space when others are telling me their story. Tassone explained there are three chairs in spiritual direction, one for the director, one for the directee, and a third for the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is the director, not me, she said. That feels so true. In her experience with her own spiritual director and what she has witnessed with her clients, she shared that sometimes just speaking your truth aloud is one of the most freeing things you can do. We all need a place where we can have a compassionate listener, someone who is not judging everything you are saying. Part of the beauty of this ministry is speaking your truth in the presence of God's love. The intent is not to fix, but to listen with compassion, and the Spirit will do what the Spirit will do. You are discerning God's presence within your own life. It's just right there. Dan Roche completed his training at Creighton University and said he prefers the term spiritual companion over spiritual director because it is a role in which one is accompanied rather than supervised. Those in this role should practice what they preach, in a sense, practicing mindfulness and awareness, he said. The qualities of a good spiritual companion are their listening skills, their ability to listen at a deeper level, and to really be able to hear God's promptings from within the person and mirror back what they hear. They must have a non-anxious listening presence, the ability to affirm the person and not engage in judgmental critiquing. In turn, Roche said, those seeking spiritual companionship have to have a desire to grow and be open to God's presence and compassion in the ways life presents itself to us, in the circumstances and the relationships that challenge us to grow and mature. Life experience is such a profound teacher. Each of us has a unique contribution or calling or vocation, our calling or vocation to make in building up the reign of God, and that is affirmed in spiritual companioning. I want to shout to the world that there are so many saints among us that we do not know about. There is so much good in the world, said Tessoni, reflecting on her experience as a spiritual director. People are not perfect, but their love is perfect. In the space of their vulnerability, in their relationship with God, I hear and smile at the beauty of His creation, just yearning to please, to be held and loved. The sacred space that we occupy together is also part of my journey, and I am grateful for that. There is no one right way to go about finding a spiritual director, but suggestions include asking your pastor or a trusted friend for a referral, inquiring through a reputable training program, and praying for God's guidance. Most directors do ask for a stipend since it is their primary ministry, and many will offer sliding scale fees. The Archdiocese of Cincinnati Office for Consecrated Life offers valuable resources for those seeking spiritual direction. Spiritual mentoring is another option and sometimes a preliminary step for those seeking support as they begin to develop a prayer life, the essential foundation for spiritual direction. School of Faith offers spiritual mentoring. To learn more and sign up, spiritual mentorship at schoolofaith.com. Mary and Elizabeth is a group of spiritual directors for women. For more information, visit https://spiritual-direction-page. And finally, Seek Direction is an online group designed to help Catholics find a spiritual director. The founders are practicing Catholics trained in Ignatian spiritual direction. Learn more at seekdirection.app/home. Thank you everyone for listening today. Have a wonderful Palm Sunday and a wonderful Happy Easter coming up. So excited. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.